Today, suspended. The market update for the 4th of September 2021. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. In today's show, we look at the latest from the markets, across from the US through to Australia, and we also touch on the latest Bitcoin news ahead of important developments next week. But first, as at the 27th of August this year, the New York Fed staff nowcast stood at 3.8% for the third quarter 2021. News from that week's data increased the now cast by 0.3 percentage points. Now, their model produces a now cast of so-called real GDP growth, incorporating a wide range of macroeconomic data as it becomes available. And referring to the end of August, they said that a positive surprise from manufacturers' shipments of durable goods data accounted for most of the increase. But now, the New York Fed has just said, and I quote, "The uncertainty around the pandemic and the consequent volatility in the data have posed a number of challenges to the nowcast model. Therefore, we've decided to suspend the publication of the nowcast while we continue to work on methodological improvements to better address these challenges." And recall that last week, Jerome Powell said that they will be watching the data closely before making a call on tapering or rate rises. And here is an example of a nasty downside surprise. US hiring downshifted abruptly in August, with the smallest job gain in 7 months, complicating a potential decision by the Federal Reserve to begin scaling back monetary support by the end of the year. Non-farm payrolls increased 235,000 last month, trailing all forecasts after an upwardly revised 1.05 million gain in July, according to data from the Labour Department, which was released on Friday. Employment in leisure and hospitality, which had posted strong gains recently, were flat amid the spreading Delta variant and persistent hiring challenges. Last month, there were no new jobs created across the entire leisure and hospitality industry. This result is far below the 720,000 jobs that economists had forecast. In the food service industry specifically, payrolls declined by 42,000 in August. And yet, the unemployment rate fell to 5.2% from 5.4%. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note rose while the dollar fell, and the S&P 500 opened lower after the report. The deceleration in hiring likely reflects both spreading fears about the rapidly spreading Delta variant of COVID-19 and difficulties filling vacant positions. In August, 5.6 million people reported that they were unable to work because of the pandemic, up from 5.2 million a month earlier, according to the Labour Department. The surging infections, which has already curbed consumer activity and disrupted in-person schooling and return-to-office plans, may have led to businesses to grow more cautious about hiring and dissuaded some workers from pursuing high-contact employment opportunities. Some analysts have downgraded their third-quarter economic growth forecasts as consumer spending has weakened. Sal Gattari, senior economist at BMO Capital Markets, said the August job report disappointment likely warrants a cut to his third quarter growth tracking estimates of 6%. And the latest figures have the potential to limit calls for the Fed to start tapering the brakes on its monetary stimulus. The report could also bolster President Joe Biden's push for trillions of dollars of long-term social spending after West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, a pivotal Democrat, this week demanded a strategic pause on the plan. Fed officials, including Chair Jerome Powell, have emphasized the importance of the monthly employment reports as a guide for the timing of when to begin reducing its asset purchases. The disappointing report reinforces the central bank's data-driven approach to the timing of tapering. Before Delta, we were looking for 1 million plus payroll gains in the fall, but Now that's going to be a real struggle, suggesting that Chair Powell will be in no hurry to be pushed into tapering while the labour market picture remains so uncertain, Ian Shepherdson, chief economist at Pantheon Macroeconomics, said in the note. Employment in leisure and hospitality was flat in August, held back by that 42,000 decrease in payrolls at restaurants and bars. Retail trade, construction, government and healthcare employment also declined last month. Payrolls at professional and business services, transportation and warehousing and manufacturing all did increase last month. Factory employment climbed 37,000 in August, reflecting a sizable boost at motor vehicle plants. US payrolls, therefore, are still 5.3 million below their pre-pandemic level. And meanwhile, the participation rate, that's the share of Americans who are employed or looking for work, was unchanged last month at 61.7% and remains restrained by persistent childcare challenges and virus concerns. Many economists and parents had pointed to September as the month when those factors would have largely abated, but the Delta variant has pushed back that timeline. Uncertainty remains over the path of the virus. While hospitalizations are starting to fall in recent hotspots, there is concern about it spreading to other parts of the country. Attracting and retaining employees has been a massive challenge for businesses ranging from restaurants and retailers to manufacturers and builders. As a result, companies like Amazon have raised wages and offered one-time bonuses to attract candidates. And Coal Corp announced bonuses for hourly workers who stay with the department store operator through the holiday season. Earnings have risen in recent months as businesses raise pay to attract candidates. Overall average hourly earnings rose 0.6% last month, twice as much as forecast, though possibly a reflection of the composition of the August employment. Average weekly hours were unchanged at 34.7 in August. The report comes just before the September 6th official end of the supplemental pandemic unemployment insurance programs, and roughly half of US states ended the benefits early in an attempt to assuage worker shortages. Labour market data from individual states have shown little indication the actions have materially boosted employment so far, but some companies have attributed increases in applications to the expiration of those benefits. The unemployment rate fell for every major demographic group except Black Americans, which saw a pickup to 8.8%. That partly reflects a reflection of increased labour force participation. For women aged 25 to 54, though, the participation rate edged down. So US stock indices ended mixed, therefore, on Friday, with the Nasdaq booking its 35th record close in 2021, but the other two major indices closed lower, heading into a three-day Labour Day weekend after those monthly employment data figures came through. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed down 0.2% on the session and booked a weekly decline of 0.24%. The S&P 500 index was down 0.03% and marked a 0.6% gain on the week, while the Nasdaq was up 0.21% for the day. And that's enough for that closing record high. It's 35th for the year, contributing to a weekly gain of 1.6%. The volatility index was unchanged at 1641, and gold futures for December delivery was up 1.05% to 1,830. Elsewhere, crude oil for delivery in October fell 1.06% to 69.25, while the euro US dollar was up 0.03% to 1.1876, and the US dollar index futures was down 0.09% to 92.14. European stock markets traded in tight trading ranges on Friday as investors waited the release of those key US employment figures. The UK FTSE ended down 0.36% to 7,138, while the German DAX was down 0.37% to 15,781. In Asia, the Shanghai was down 0.43% to 3,591. We discussed the downside news from China yesterday in my post with Tara Brooker, but data out of China showed the country's services sector entering contraction territory in August, with the Cakes and Services Purchasing Managers Index falling to 46.7. That's the lowest level since April 2020. In contrast, Japan's Nikkei 225 rose 2.5% to 29,128 after the Japanese Prime Minister Suga offered to resign, opening the way for a fresh government. The outcome was seen as favourable to the market due to the criticism Suga received in handling the coronavirus pandemic. Actually, his support ratings sank to below 30%. And with that in mind, investors may have cheered the prospect of better days with a new prime minister. Suga will finish his term as the ruling Liberal Democratic Party president until his successor is chosen on September 29th, though the new LDP president will also be the new premier because of their majority in the lower house, so no drastic policy changes are likely. And the new general elections are expected to be held on October the 17th. Now in Australia, Westpac has slashed its growth forecast in response to Victoria's rising COVID-19 case numbers and the state government abandoning its zero case objective, and said that the Reserve Bank of Australia should respond by increasing its weekly bond purchases. The bank lowered its projections for GDP growth in the September quarter to a 4% contraction from a 2.6% contraction. And it also lowered its December quarter forecast from 2.6% to 1.6% and its 2021 forecast to zero growth. Westpac increased its forecast for 2022 from 5% to 7.4%. Chief Economist Bill Evans said the Reserve Bank should respond to conditions by lifting its weekly bond purchases by $1 billion. We fully expect that the taper commitment will be deferred, he said, but an even better response would be to lift purchases from $5 billion to $6 billion with a review at the November board meeting when the risks around the reopening of the economies and the spread of the virus will be much clearer. The Reserve Bank has always been prepared to contribute to policy efforts to assist in dealing with economic shocks. This brutal contraction in the economy should be no exception, they said. At the end of the week, a rebound in commodity prices and an upbeat second quarter GDP result did push the Australian share market higher for a second week running. The ASX 200 climbed 34.6 points, or 0.5%, to 7,522, recovering from a midweek dip and rising 0.5% on Friday to 7,522. The Australian economy unexpectedly grew by 0.7% in the second quarter, almost double the growth rate that economists had been expecting, ahead of an almost certain contraction in the third quarter. But these numbers were driven by some one-offs, as we discussed in our earlier post. NAB led the advances in the local share market, rising 3.8% to 2870. It has the strongest exposure to small businesses of the major banks, and I'd make the point that many small businesses are struggling, according to my surveys, so that might be overstated. The worst performing sector was tech, with Afterpay down 2.8%. The banks may be overcooked more generally, as much of the mortgage book activity is being driven by refinancing to lower rates, which will pressurise margins. And while base metals also rose this week, the price of iron ore dipped further, with more downside possible. That said, South 32 climbed 13.1% to 328, Fortescue Metals firmed 4.3% to 2085, and Rio Tinto rose 1.5% to 111.37. BHP Group fell 5.3% to 42.35 as it traded ex-dividend. Smaller miners were also among the market's best performers. Invacare shares climbed 12% to 12.52 after reporting a strong rebound in profits during the first 6 months of the year, and Webjet added 7.6% to 5.95 this week after it told investors its European and North American hotel room businesses were resurging even as its Australian flight bookings were gutted. Mesoblast was the worst performer on the market this week after the FDA raised some questions about its flagship experimental drug for treating inflammation and respiratory disease. Its shares dropped 13.4% to 171. Altium fell 7.8% to 32.10 after its results disappointed expectations, with revenue and EBITDA both missing guidance. And Nuix dropped 7% to 267 after it swung to a loss in its results for the 2021 financial year. Investors were also anticipating the possible sale of $340 million worth of stock by ex-executives and Macquarie Bank, as more than a third of the company's share registry came out of escrow. Now, looking ahead, the dividend windfall due from blue chip stocks in the next month sets up a volatile dynamic for some big income paying stocks as investors decide what to do with their hefty payouts and shuffle portfolios in anticipation that the record distributions won't be replicated. With a whopping $40 billion of dividends to be distributed to shareholders, September will see many of the share market's biggest companies trade ex-dividend or without the right to the next payment. While stocks tend to recover quickly from their ex-dividend trading losses, investors are speculating whether this year could be different due to the sheer magnitude of cash flowing into the shareholders' pockets. You could make a case that a lot of these blue chip dividends are special because they reflect the rare boom time conditions that they've had in the past financial year, said Ben Clark, portfolio manager at TMS Capital. The capital returns have been so enormous, they're unlikely to be repeated, meaning I don't think all those returns will get piled back into the same stock they came from. The largest dividend-paying companies generally hold a significant market weighting where any drop is felt across the whole index. This was illustrated on Thursday when BHP declined 6.9% and took 32.4 points off the ASX 200 for the day. Combine this with fellow ex-dividend trading majors Woolworths and CSL, and the three companies pushed the market down 44.4 points. The benchmark index dropped 41.4 points in the session. On Wednesday, an ex-dividend Wesfarmers fell 1.8% and took 4.4 points off the entire market, while Endeavour Group dropped 2.6%, stealing nearly a full point. The S&P ASX 200 shed 7.8 points on that day. And the broader market could face more pressure next week as heavy hitters Fortescue Metals, Blue Scope Steel and Viva Energy face a similar scenario. While fund managers are anticipating that much of the capital return to shareholders from the spree of takeovers, buybacks and dividends will return to the market via reinvestment, the uncertainty posed by company outlooks, which plagued earnings seasons, could influence how investors use their income. There could be a digestion period, and sentiment may drop as people look at the uncertainties ahead and question whether they are comfortable with the market, said John Lobb, portfolio manager at Insect Funds Management. If there isn't a dividend reinvestment plan on offer, investors may just take the dividend and look to another stock or even stick it in the bank to spend when things open up. And the question that faces these companies and to an extent the whole market over the next 2 months is, what are investors going to do with their capital returns? That depends on whether companies can replicate the form from the 2021 financial year. And there have already been some early signals that shares have passed the peak as far as dividends go. Last week, Harvey Norman reported bumper results but slashed its final dividend and cut down on marketing to preserve cash due to the clouded outlook. We just don't know what's going to happen. Are we going to be open in 2 weeks, 2 months, 6 months? Is Delta going to close all of Australia? You just don't know, said Gerry Harvey. Since reporting its earnings on August the 31st, the stock has fallen 8% and will trade ex-dividend October the 15th. During August, the three iron ore majors all corrected in price, which is a fall of more than 10% from the valuation peaks. And finally, in crypto land, this week was relatively calm. We saw Bitcoin touch $50,000 a few times. However, it struggled to remain above that important threshold over the last few days. At the time of writing, Bitcoin was at $49,898, up 1.32%. There are some intriguing bits of news, though, this week that hit the stand. Twitter is working to integrate Bitcoin payments, and El Salvador is finalizing its Bitcoin plans. Mining takes the spotlight, and the SEC's chairman continues to sing Bitcoin's praises. On Tuesday, El Salvador's Democratic Assembly approved the country's $150 million Bitcoin trust ahead of the nation officially implementing Bitcoin as legal tender early next week. The launch will see each citizen receive $30 in Bitcoin through the country's dedicated Chivo wallet, with 200 ATMs to be installed across the country. This despite several small protests across El Salvador against next week's official rollout of Bitcoin as legal tender. Although the $30 each citizen will receive in Bitcoin is a drop in the bucket compared to the global market's daily volume, if the majority decide to sell their new holdings, it may end up dissuading other countries from pursuing plans to adopt Bitcoin as legal tender. And on Wednesday, US SEC Chairman Gary Gensler, speaking to the European Parliament about Bitcoin, noted how the network operates 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and across borders. He said that this innovation has been and could continue to be a catalyst for change in the field of finance and money. And I think the transformation we're living through right now could be every bit as big as the internet in the 1990s. And also, rounding off Wednesday's busy day in Bitcoin, some leaks were shared of Twitter beta testing a Bitcoin tipping service in partnership with Lightning payment app Strike, which would later be confirmed by the company's product lead. This follows on remarks from CEO Jack Dorsey in July that Bitcoin would be implemented for tipping, super follows, commerce, and subscriptions. And on Thursday, Vast Bank became the first chartered bank in the US to offer Bitcoin services. Customers will be able to buy and sell Bitcoin directly from an FDIC-insured checking account, while its Bitcoin custody solutions include a mobile trading platform with instant settlements on its accounts. And also on Thursday, Franklin Templeton, an investment manager with over $1.5 trillion in assets under management operating in 34 countries across the globe, published a job listing on LinkedIn, looking for a research analyst cryptocurrency. So next week's going to be interesting for Bitcoin. Will El Salvador see Bitcoin as legal tender run? Or will people sell their $30? Who knows? Not to mention, of course, we're also just 2 months away from the Taproot soft fork activating. So expect more volatility ahead. And talking of volatility, I still think the overall markets are going to go through a significant wobble ahead. I've said for some time, September, October looks to me to be that questionable time of year. But I'd also make the point that I think the Fed will continue to run QE programs into the foreseeable future. And I also think the RBA will probably up its game in terms of QE. To that extent, Westpac's probably right. And as I've argued previously, quantitative easing is irreversible, and therefore the markets will continue to be supported by those programs until the market realizes that there's a problem with those very programs. That may take some time. We will see. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again.